Welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ailey Packham and we are shaking our heads in disbelief in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, where do we start with this week? It seems that it is the fine art of shooting yourself in the foot. First, an early mistake from Bart Verbruggen at Craven Cottage gifted Fulham an early lead and gave us a mountain to climb. We then climbed that mountain, got ourselves on level terms, dominated the game, and then conceded two late goals, leaving us still searching for our first top flight win over the Cottagers. And then on Sunday, we travelled to Leicester, where we were 2-0 up going into the 86th minute, only to see us concede two late goals. That saw Leicester get an undeserved share of the spoils. And this is now becoming a recurring theme. Perhaps then we'll have the chance to put all of that behind us with a visit of Crystal Palace on Sunday. But a win over our deadly rivals would certainly be brilliant, but there would still be a lot of unanswered questions about us throwing away leads. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we have a stellar cast for you in the shape of the wonderful Tom Hylands, and making his first Roar appearance for a year or so, it's the one and only Matthew Potter. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Eddie. How are you?
Welcome to group therapy.
Thank you very much.
Indeed. In fact, actually, Tom, last time you were on, we actually, I think you that's what you called this when after you were on after a defeat.
Yeah, I feel like pretty much every time I come on the Roar now, it's just after some horrendous kind of luck or games, and it's just us kind of getting it off our chest. So
it's
glad to be back.
It's not deliberate, sorry.
And it's just so frustrating, though, isn't it? I mean, we thought it was bad after the Wolves game. I mean, and it was pretty much 86th minute, 2-0 up in that game as well, and we capitulated actually we're lucky to come away with a point in the end. But it's actually our points record of actually coming from behind to win games is actually probably just as good.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? You know, I think just our form against top half teams must be better than our form against bottom half teams across the last few years. You know, we get ourselves in these great positions and it's almost like a hold my beer. Let's see how much we can mess it up and how different we can do it this time.
Matt, you've been, you know, watching football, not necessarily just the Albion, but, you know, sort of top flight football for a long time. I mean, is this a sort of form based malaise, or is it sort of just, well, that's football?
Well, part of it is it's that football, isn't it? Sunday was a particularly egregious example of it. Although the joy of it was that I was texted by a Spurs fan who accused us of being Spursy. And I then had the joy of listening to Spurs be as Spursy as you can possibly be on the way home, which was nice. I think Tom's right. I mean, it's been the story of the last few years, hasn't it? So it's there's definitely something about, for me, there's definitely something about we play better football against better teams.
Mm.
And we get sucked down to the level of... Yeah. Worst team of the worst teams, and we end up playing sort of horrible pub football against them.
Yeah, but Matt, on Sunday in particular, I mean, we weren't particularly at our sparkling best, but we were comfortable. And yeah. At 2-0 up going into the 86th minute, your game management has got to be you close it out. And
well,
that's
true. I mean, we were even though we weren't playing well, we're winning because we've now got better players than they have. Is the truth, yeah. But. For me, the game management was there were two things wrong. One was I really don't see messing up your defensive formation in the hope of keeping them out. It actually makes you more vulnerable. And secondly, Igor, why weren't you belting it into Rose Ed like Dunk?
Well, yeah. speaking about putting it through like Dunk,
3 minutes to spare, yeah, is just insanity.
Yeah. But I mean, it was like a recurring theme all week, really. I mean, we should probably start with Thursday night at the cottage, where somehow we can win there in the championship, we can win there in the fourth division, we can win there in the third division, but we just can't win in the top flight. Never have. I
Good
don't get
chance.
it.
That
It's
point is
weird.
frankly irrelevant, really, isn't it? It's just one of those sort of statistical anomalies that doesn't really have any. I mean, because I was watching the build up to it, and they were saying, "Oh, is it going to play on the players' mind?" And you think, well, most of these players haven't played it against Fulham for Brighton, and therefore aren't going to give a flying toss about
No.
that particular stat. And I'll be astonished if any players do care about that particular stat. I mean, it's not a statistic necessarily that they're going to worry about. It's the nature of we play well, we lose. We play well, we're 2-0 up with 5 minutes to go, we don't win. Those are the things that I mean, you can statisticalize them, but frankly, what you're looking at here is a mindset rather than
Yeah,
any stats.
Fulham are a good team. I
Yeah.
mean, no shame in losing to Fulham away.
No, I mean, I think
No,
it's. Just on the
I
but
mean,
yeah, but it's just on the back of actually again playing well. You know, having you know a lot of the possession, and I think your point that you just sort of spat out there now, Matt, was sort of lower teams. And I wouldn't call Fulham that, obviously, but when you're not talking about the big six, or even then throwing in the likes of Villa and Newcastle at times as well, that. Those are the kind of teams that can afford you a bit more space, and because they're playing their game. And I still maintain that nowadays, certainly over the last couple of years or so, that other clubs have come to realise that you have to be a little bit careful against Brighton and therefore play a bit further back. Otherwise, they're going to take you apart. And what we haven't worked out is how to take a team apart that is actually going to re retreat a little bit.
Yeah,
Um,
Tom.
and especially. As our defense is so susceptible to a break.
Yeah, Tom.
I think it's also interesting. We've kind of this season either been super clinical, for example, at Bournemouth, take our chances and pretty much ride our luck, or games like at Craven Cottage, we have quite a number of very, very good chances to score goals and they somehow don't end up in the net. And you just kind of look for that consistency, especially in front of goal, and that's what the elite teams in the league are good at. That's why they win the games because they take their chances. If we took our chances at Craven Cottage, it's we finally beat the Craven Cottage curse.
I mean, we've often had this thing, haven't we, that like the opposition goalkeeper has the best game of his life against us. But is that good goalkeeping or poor finishing? I'm saying it's poor finishing.
Oh, against Fulham, it was poor finishing. You know, a dinger in front of goal that should be a relatively simple finish. In the was that in the first half, second half, free header from Van Hekker, I think it was, and it's always rising. Those are kind of simple things that we should be doing better.
But Matt, this is a sort of a repeat from 3 or 4 years ago. Graham Potter playing some, well, at the time we felt. Sort of, you know, this amazing stuff that frankly we didn't have in the last days of Houghton. And let's face it, I mean, the last days of Houghton are best probably glossed over. But there we were playing some really attractive football and not being able to hit, you know, what's the phrase? A cow's backside with a banjo. Again, is that just one of those that's football thing, or is there a mindset that needs
No, I
altering
don't
pretty
think mine.
sharpish?
I mean, in the last couple of weeks, I've seen two of the, well, certainly two of the most sublime passes leading to goals. The Yao Pedro's pass to Mitoma at Bournemouth is such a thing of beauty. I watch it virtually every day. I mean, it was absolutely gorgeous. So I don't think I don't think it's quite the same. I mean, I think our problem is, if anything, is we don't have anything other than Yao Pedro and Welbeck. So I'm sorry to say that, Ferguson appears to have gone severely off the boil. And Ciso appears not to be getting the chance anymore. Mitoma is often so marked out of the game. It's difficult, and it's good to see. It's good to. I mean, I like the fact that I mean, I love Belabor anyway, but it's good to see him shooting from outside the thing. It would be nice to have Nciso to shoot from outside the box. We are a bit kind of.
Well, on Ciso isn't even making the squads at the moment. I mean, I did see a picture on social media this week of while we were away at Leicester, he was in the local Tesco's.
Yeah. I mean, I think I mean, I think his problem is that he's only getting 15 minutes to show what he can do, and he tries to give you his entire repertoire in 15 minutes. He's so sort of desperate. But the sort of reason I was mentioning him was really because he gives us something else. He gives us someone who'll shoot from distance.
Absolutely. So with that in mind and all the attacking options, the one person you haven't mentioned is kind of one of the new kids on the block is Jorginho Rutter. What have you made of him so far?
Really, I like him. I like him. He's he's strong. He puts himself about. He's hard to shake off the ball. He's got a good work rate. He's sort of in a sense he's kind. I know this is an unfair comparison, but there's something about him that reminds me a bit of Haaland. He's awkward. You know that crab thing that Haaland does that makes it almost impossible to get round him to get to the ball. He's got kind of that. He's got that kind of when he gets the ball, he's kind of.
It's like a shield comes around him, isn't
It
there?
is, yeah. I really like him. I really like him. I think
I
he's.
love the fact that also off the pitch he's a giggler.
Yeah. No, I think I think.
He's a giggler on the pitch.
Yeah, I think he's. He's good. He's a good, strong player.
Now,
Tom.
is he there for? I mean, it's hypothetical, so we haven't seen it. Is he, should the sort of like the proverbial number 19 bus come along, is he a line leader? Is he someone who's going to be able to take over from Welbeck or Pedro at a moment's notice? Or is he.
I don't know. You'll have to see, we'd have to see, wouldn't
Okay.
we?
So
Maybe.
you see, I mean, Matt and Tom, I'm not really having what you're saying about Evan Ferguson, to be honest. I mean, I think. I mean, there's been a lot of paper talk and speculation about the fact that he may be looking for a loan move come January because he's not getting necessarily the minutes that he actually wants. But I mean, basically, he had a truncated season last year. He's found opportunities difficult to come by this year. Obviously, we've got a much more bloated squad than we did last year as well. We've got a lot more attacking talent to try and get in. But I mean, I don't think your assertion that he's a busted flush and
I don't think
it's
it.
going
I
to
didn't
say
say that,
that.
but I said he appears to have gone off the boil a bit. That's how the term buffy,
But I
like
mean, that's just form. I mean,
really
just
low.
form and confidence. I mean, put him in an
Well,
Ireland shirt, he's confident.
that's true. But I'm saying his form seems to have dipped, and he seems low in confidence. You can phrase it how you like, but he's not. Against Southampton, I'm hard pushed to remember much that he did. I'm sorry, against Leicester, I'm hard pushed to remember much that he did. And he got muscled off the ball a couple of times when I didn't think that he should have been, or he should have been, looked a bit stronger. But hey.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Do you agree, Tom?
Well, I think that it's hard, especially coming back after an injury and only getting 10, 15, 20 minutes at a time, and then you're given a start, but you don't really have anything to build from on that. And I do wonder whether Southampton and Fulham, in particular, we're slight victim of what we were last year, where we've rotated for the sake of rotating seemingly. Against Fulham, we suddenly line up with a back three when, pretty much all season we played with a back four. That kind of screamed a little bit of like, oh, Dunk's back fit. We just need to try and fit him back in to the team. And I know that we had a game Sunday as well, but you just look at it and go, De Zerbi was the same. They don't like the midweek fixtures, some of these
But
managers.
what is it about Fulham and psychedelic team selections? I mean, we've had it under the last three managers now where they've gone complete. I mean, do you remember
Perfectly.
that game under, I think it was actually Potter's last away game in charge of us, where poor old Enoch Mwepu had absolutely no idea where he's meant to be, and neither did anyone else on the pitch.
I think that was a little bit harsh. I wouldn't call it psychedelic. I mean, let's put it this way: when certainly since Potter, definitely under De Zerbi as well, and under Hertzler. And this is the kind of this triumvirate that started, you know, like I said, with Houghton's exit, is that all the players are expected to be flexible in what they do, pointing Case, paying Pascal Gross at right back, and so on. So when they have this change around, people are always saying, oh, Potter's got no plan A. Actually, he often put in plan A, B, C, D, and E during the same game. So the nature of the flexibility of whether an extra defender comes on or they play three at the back, they've all trained for it. They all know exactly what they're doing and what they're supposed to be doing. And I think that was borne out by the fact that actually how much we bossed the possession and the chances, certainly in the first half at Fulham. So they're all comfortable with it just because we're not used to it. You know, let's put it this way. They wouldn't train with a back four and then put out a back three. You know, they've worked hard for it. And it's down to then the individual errors, isn't it? I mean, you can't actually account for Verbruggen doing what he did.
Oh, 100%. However, I think, you know, whilst Dunk's been injured and whilst we've been playing with back four, our defence has actually looked reasonably solid. We've not seemed to be as susceptible to the counter-attack and we've conceded a lot less goals. We go to a back three against Fulham, who are very good attacking side and have a lot of talent there, admittedly. But we did look a lot more vulnerable under the back three. And then when we moved to the back four, even though we did concede two goals late on in the game, you felt that we generally felt a little bit stronger in general play. So I don't know whether it's more a case of teams knowing how to play against us when we're playing a back three a bit more, because obviously that's a formation that we played a lot over the last few years. I don't know, but it does feel a little bit like there's been changes in a few of the games that tactically have left us a little more vulnerable. But ultimately, that's football.
I haven't seen a convincing back three from us, I don't think, this season. I think Van Hecker doesn't like it and he's not quick enough for it. And it's all very well. I mean, it's all very well saying, yeah, you know, they practiced it in training and they but when you put it into a game, it doesn't seem to work very well for us, I don't think.
Well, in as much as there's a possibility that they were basically getting under each other's feet. I'm not sure what Van Hecker trying to kick the living daylights out of the substitute seats was when he came off. He seemed very upset, and I don't know if it was specifically about being taken off, which is a little bit petulant, or was about the fact that actually, and I don't think it's necessarily that, because like I say, as much as they're saying it's a back three, Van Hecker had to do an awful lot of work at right back, which made me think it was a kind of more of a back four. And as a right back, he's a little bit of a liability. Now, if you're saying that's because you've got to get Dunk in the side, then you know full well that it's Dunk and Van Hecker that work better. And you think, oh, well, what has Igor done to be dropped? But it's a team game, and at times like that, you just have to bite it. If he's trying to keep all three happy by picking them, then you know he's ended up sort of helping no one. But if it's going to be about, and at the moment we don't really have, I suppose we've got Lamptey and he can blow hot and cold, but let's face it, you want Veltman as your right back. And if he's not ready, then, you know, Kadioglu isn't really the answer for me because the man can't defend. And after that, we're kind of stuck. Adingra, well, that's a waste of his talent. So, I suppose you've got to stick a defender out there.
It's a bit, I mean, I agree with you about Veltman, but Lamptey was pretty much my man of the match against Leicester.
Yeah.
In a great game, not necessarily as a right back.
It was the first time he played 90 minutes for a very long time as well.
Well, this is it, and it's also again. I mean, it's the point. It brings me back to the point you made about Ferguson. The reason that he probably will stay, as much as we don't have that crystal ball, the reason he will stay is because it hasn't happened lately. Touch wood, but you know, Welbeck has spent a lot of his career on the physio's table, and that's where the likes of Ferguson then needs to step up. And in the past, you know, 18 months or so, has done so. But No, you can't help feeling that Welbeck is just that one stretch away from being, you know, oh, Danny, take it easy. Don't stretch. Don't stretch. I mean, that said, and I do apologize for actually putting the mockers on it. I personally think he's in the form of his life at the moment.
You
Oh,
Danny?
at the moment, he would be my player of the season, Welbeck,
Yeah.
if I had to vote today. He's literally probably playing the best football he ever has.
Yeah. There was one moment in the Chelsea game when we broke and there was a ball forward for him to run onto, and we were sort of at pitch level. And it was like, Jesus Christ, I had no idea he could be that quick.
Oh, he's rapid.
I
He is
mean,
really
really,
rapid.
really rapid. Really
Brilliant.
rapid.
I think the thing is, well, I mean, obviously we're just under halfway into the season now, and I still don't think we've worked out, obviously particularly with the extra bodies we brought in, and that we brought in a lot of bodies which are supposedly meant to be, as what we call box fresh players, ready to go players, not ones that are going to be developed and shipped out on loan, but players who are meant to be ready to go. And I would argue that not all of those have settled yet, and not all of them have been given an opportunity in the correct positions yet.
We've also had the highest injury list in the Premier League, so that's going to be disrupting it quite a lot. And I think if you look at this point last season, we were pretty much on the same points and the same goal difference, pretty much give or take a point or a couple of goals. And this was before our complete, you know, fall away in the season. So I think that we can be guilty of looking very short termism of the last two games and go, oh, we should have picked up more points, and that's natural. But actually, across the season, we're still having a very good season. We're still only a couple of points off of the top four, and you know, it's all positive.
And if you are going to do a like for like as best you can, don't forget that this last season or last close season, we had quite an overhaul. We had to have a new manager. We brought in 180 million quid's worth of players, whatever it was, because there was an opportunity to get these players in on the relative cheap. And these players, I think I'm kind of sort of moving on from the point that you're making here, AD, is that there's a lot of people to settle in, and that includes the manager. And so the upheaval hasn't been as much as I think that possibly other clubs might have suffered for. So in the fact that a relatively still lower in terms of budget, lower mid-table side is still punching above its weight and doing and in seventh, you know, I think we're doing okay. It's just frustrating knowing full well that we can be better, have been better, and haven't got the points for it. And that's, I think all that we're mostly, you know, I just if I was to ever get a chance to speak to Fabian Hürzeler, and I would love to, I'd just say, look, you know, and I'm sure he knows it. It's just, can you get your players to be a bit more ruthless?
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? Because if you look at the games that we've drawn when we should have won, primarily against teams either in the bottom three or around it, you take those points, we're suddenly second and 3 points behind Liverpool. And it's a
Exactly.
very, very different show that we've got.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
The thing that worries me is that we're never going to see Belieber in a in Europe. That's what really worries
Yeah.
me. I think he has the potential to be the best player we've had in living memory. And we're going to flog him before we qualify for Europe.
But that assumes that the transfer policy is the same as 2 years ago, whereas I think we've moved on a bit from that. And the talk at the moment is that they'll offer him a new contract. And you know, I hope that
They will, but
players
they
look
won't
at,
offer him the wages that someone else will
this
there.
is it.
But
I'm
they
not
can
concerned
still
about.
offer a big increase to what he's got and say, look, you need to showcase yourself in Europe first with us
I mean,
before you'll get a move to a big club.
I can't believe I'm going to say this in terms of Brighton and Hove Albion, but obviously the best chance we have of keeping him is qualifying for the Champions League because, hey, the following season he'll be playing Champions League football. Now, is he going to do that with Brighton and Hove Albion, or is he going to go to Barcelona or Real Madrid? You never know. And of course, you know, Matt's point, that's where Matt's point kicks in, is obviously the salaries are going to be astronomical compared to what we're doing. But also, you've got to appreciate that, and I think that there have been cautionary tales. Is that we sold Cucurella, we sold Caicedo, we sold Bissouma. I think in each one of those cases, a season before they were ready to be sold, because they took their time to settle in, because they hadn't actually done what I would call their apprenticeship with Ickle Brighton before moving to their big things. And that's, if Chelsea want to spend those stupid amounts of money, then yeah, we can't say no. But for the ter in terms of the players' progression, they ideally need another year, but that's probably just fanciful thinking.
Is there also a cautionary tale there from the buy-in side? Because if you think about our players of the season that have then been sold, I don't think any of them have then gone on to have the same talk and raving reviews as they had when they were with us. Right, that might be the case that they're surrounded by better players in general, so they don't stand out as much. But you do kind of suspect that there might be a bit of buyer's regret in some of these cases. Bissouma is nothing like what he was with us. Caicedo, whilst he's picked up a bit, nothing like it. Cucurella, very much so. And to a certain extent, McAllister is not
I think McAllister's
as
probably the exception
prominent.
here. I think he has moved on.
I think Caicedo is beginning to as well show signs
Yeah,
of.
he's beginning to, but it's taken him a long time, is the point I was kind of making, really. If he'd have, he'd have been much more oven ready if he'd have stayed with us for another year.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the whole thing, isn't it? I mean, don't forget, we at that point we had both McAllister and Caicedo, two of the best midfielders in the world, a current World Cup winner who won the World Cup whilst playing for Brighton. It's just, it's. I mean, I'll never get tired of saying that.
Who's Belabor's best partner in midfield then?
Crikey, I was just thinking, whoever Belabor is alongside, it's not going to be
Pascal
the equivalent
Gross.
of McAllister, is it?
No.
At the moment, to be
That's just
honest,
that's the eternal question for Fabian Hürzler, isn't it, though? Because we have
well,
got
yes and no,
we got
because
you've got a Hinshelwood, you've got Vifa, you've got O'Reilly, you've got
Ayari.
Ayari. There's I mean, Ayari is probably the surprise package, really, because no, when we were having these conversations at the beginning of the season, he wasn't even in the conversation.
Well, yes, but the thing is, what worries me about him, and it's part of his progress, is I'd like to see, as he progresses, that it's later and later into a given match that he gets his yellow card, rather than walking the tightrope because he's been booked in the 18th minute. And that's going to come from an improvement in performance.
Well, I mean, I think
Sorry,
that.
sorry, AD, sorry. In answer to your question, Matt, at the moment, we don't have someone as good as McAllister to sort of be the automatic choice. Especially when you consider that also behind them or ahead of them would have been Pascal Gross. And we haven't got a like for like replacement. We've had to change our way of doing it because, we just don't have that sort of similar kind of player. So when you're saying, AD, that it's actually down to Fabian Hürzler, it's also, I suspect, if we really want someone as good as McAllister, it's also going to be down to the recruitment as well.
I mean, ultimately, I think it's going to be Wefa, but he's just not
Yeah.
settled yet. It's just going to take
Well, he
time.
needs Wefa. The thing about Wefa is that he needs time to see if he can get up to the pace of the Premier League, doesn't
Yes. Yeah.
And he'll need the pace for the Champions League next season.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he needs, I mean,
Very
he
good.
needs time to see. He does look. I mean, I've got my Dutch friend who has been right about every Dutch player who's come here.
Yeah.
He said Wefa does stuff that no other footballer in Holland does. His range of passing, the way he always makes himself available for the ball, that and the other. But you can see the pace of the Premier League
Yeah.
is a different thing. But he needs time.
Oddly enough, he needs time, which is what he doesn't have when he's on the pitch. I know the point you're making here. He just basically needs to do what he's doing quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to
I
say
mean that's.
some Brighton
Go
fans
for
might say that he does things that no other player does on the pitch as well at the moment, but probably for the other reasons.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean,
I mean
I think
that's why
almost
a lot of
every
people.
time he does that, it's because he's caught out by the pace.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons people are saying that he's more of a starter than a finisher, because he's got time to get up to the pace of the game with everybody else. So.
It'll happen. It'll happen. I mean, whatever it
Well,
takes.
not necessarily. It didn't happen with Danny Holler, did it?
Yeah.
Was your Dutch friend right about Danny Holler?
He was, absolutely. And Jurgen Locadia, he just wrote, "Thanks for the money, suckers."
So what's in that case, what's their reckoning on the person? I know he's slightly off form at the moment, not brilliant, but my player of the season is Van Hecke. What's their take on him?
They like Van Hecke.
Yeah. There is
Definitely.
something a bit of a maniac about him, isn't there? A
Yeah,
controlled maniac.
they have high hopes for Van Hecke.
Yeah,
So,
and yet he's not a first choice in the national side, is he?
oh
Not
yeah,
yet.
but I'm pretty
Yeah,
sure.
give it time. He will be. Okay. All right, well, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show is brought to you in association with the brilliant Flowers Unlimited. Al, what can you get for Christmas from Dave Costa at Flowers Unlimited?
Well, you can get flowers if you're so minded, but like I say, as long as you don't go through a cemetery or park and actually just nick something, you are better off getting some really nice floral tributes from Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. If you do head into there and wish to buy your Christmas or floral treats in there, just let them know you're an Albion season ticket holder. You automatically get 20% off. They do, amongst other things, real Christmas trees, biggies as well. And as I understand it from just before we started recording, Mr. Potter of this parish at the moment has had his tree from Flowers Unlimited for a long time now. I assume that therefore that is your a good a testimony that you could actually ever offer them, Matt.
Yeah, indeed. Very good for Christmas trees. I'll go and get my flowers from him as well.
There you go.
Come for you.
So yes, they also do wreath making kits. They do table decorations, Christmas table decorations. They do all sorts of things that actually just make your home just that little bit nicer.
Yeah, Al.
Now, last week,
Yeah, Al, I was going to say, it's funny you should mention wreath making kits and table decorations.
because last week we ran a competition for anyone who wants to win one.
What an amazing coincidence.
Who knew? Who knew? So the question we asked our listener was. It was actually this week, 48 years ago, when we played Crystal Palace in an FA Cup first round second replay. In those days, you used to have replays. In fact, you used to have subsequent replays. But after the second re or from the second replay, the match would be played on a neutral ground. So this was a pretty infamous fixture. Palace were winning 1-0. We had a last minute penalty, which was scored by Horton and the referee. Ron Challis of the Palace decided that a Brighton player had encroached, so he asked the penalty to be taken again, which was saved, which incensed Alan Mullery. The famous image of him flicking V's at Palace fans, throwing change down, saying you're not worth that. The question asked was, where was that? The answer was at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea. I think there was probably only about sort of 5,000 or 6,000 there that night, but. So of all the correct answers, AD, who has won our Christmas goodies?
Yes. So thanks to everyone who entered as usual. We've got hopefully some more competitions for you coming up very, very soon. But this one, we did the draw a little bit earlier on, and the winner is Matt Roberts. So thank you very much for that, Matt. We're obviously being in touch with you about how you can obtain your kit and your table decorations.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll put Dave in touch with you and take it from there. But thanks everyone to everyone who entered. Hopefully we'll be having some competitions again in the new year. And thanks very much indeed to Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited, A, for those prizes, and B, for his ongoing support for the Albion Roar.
Right then, speaking about ongoing support, we had a good selection of supporters up in, I was going to say Filbert Street then. That's not been Filbert Street for quite a while. It's the Crisp Bowl for a while either, has it? But the King Power is where we were, and we shot ourselves in the foot again. Again, it's just another game where we should have been home and hosed.
Matt, you were there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, what can I say?
That sums it up nicely. Let's
But
move on.
we were the better team. We were winning, and then we forgot about Jamie Vardy, who, to be honest, I was surprised was still on the pitch at that late time in the game, but he was, and he did what he does very well. He made a run into the back post unmarked and stuck it away, and then we took leave of our senses and gifted them a goal. I mean that.
And again, like I say, is it a 6 of 2 threes? Is it the fact that a late change was made in order to shore up the defence that upset everyone? Or was it
Well,
purely the
no. To
individual
be
error?
fair, no. It probably wasn't that. I hate that, but it probably wasn't that. It was the decision not to hoof it.
Yeah.
The
I mean,
decision to try and dribble out of defence, and he's got a bit of form for that. It has to be said, Igor. It's not the first time you've seen him dispossessed dribbling out of defence. But
Yes.
to be doing it in the whatever it was, 90 odd minute, is pretty unforgivable,
Yeah.
really.
I mean, it was Eagles' back pass to Verbruggen on Thursday night as well that put him into it was just slightly over him.
Yeah.
But I mean, actually, but I mean, Eagle has mostly been in credit the last few weeks, though, hasn't he, Tom?
Yeah, but it's like it's at that time of the game, why would you risk it?
Wow, it's a season of goodwill, isn't it, at the moment? So,
yeah, I'm not really going to buy that one, Tom. Try again.
No.
So blur.
No.
I mean, this is the
Okay.
point. Well, this is one thing that I've noticed that the Albion haven't done for a long time is that age-old thing that drives one set of supporters round the twist and absolutely delights the other one is basically taking it to the corner, and hoping that,
I
maybe
don't care
some.
what I don't care what you do as long as you don't dribble out of defence and lose it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think one of the I've got to say now, one of the sort of advantages of getting old is I kind of went, oh, it didn't drive me. You've seen it, you've seen it so many times
Yes.
that it's just like, oh, that was a long journey for.
Yeah. For Naffle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's talk about the positives because there was some, and Lamptey's goal being an
Was lovely.
absolute pearler.
Yeah, lovely goal. Tom?
Yeah, absolutely cracking goal. And it's one that we can for sure say it was 100% meant for. It's not a cross. He's not mishit it. It's
No.
just an absolutely pure connection with the ball.
Was anyone claiming it was anything other than a?
Oh no. But normally we would expect that kind of thing from Lamptey. I think that's got to be up there with the best goal he's scored.
And it was a left foot swinger as well.
But
I
lovely.
mean, it's an interesting one with Tariq, isn't it? Because I mean, I was convinced that he was probably on his way out, actually. I mean, he was certainly, obviously, his injury record is not brilliant. We know his hamstrings are made of glass, but he seems to have like got himself back fit again. And he's been very much been getting a lot of time on the pitch.
He was, as I said, he was my man of the match on Sunday. I thought he played it, had a great game.
I mean, in with that as the caveat of that, do you see him as a sort of like the right back that we need to cover for Veltman, or would you prefer to see him more as an advanced winger?
I think he's much better going up the pitch. I think he gets caught kind of having to go backwards and covering backwards when he's naturally better further up the pitch. I think if we were playing a back three and needed a wing back, I think that's his ideal position. But I think that we do need an out and out right back as cover for Veltman. Although saying that, Veltman's not even an out and out right back himself. So
True.
maybe we just need a right back.
So when you say out and out, do you mean outhousery and outhousery right back? Because let's
Wow.
face it, he is our Mr. Dark Arts at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, Veltman does everything that we've been kind of crying out for years. How many years were we saying we're too kind a team, too nice, we're too nice to everyone, and then Veltman just has this way of
Yeah,
really
something
getting
of the
under the
night
skin of
about him,
everyone.
doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only been the last couple of seasons he's been doing that, though. I mean,
Yeah.
he certainly didn't do it in his first couple, did he?
He's learning. That's why, AD. He's
Getting
learning. He's
out as he gets older, it's like it's it probably makes his game easier for him. So I think the problem with Lamptey is what is really we've just you've just kind of hit the nail on the head is I really like him, but we haven't really got space for him.
And if we're going to do that wing back thing that we did for a bit under Houghton, we did for a bit under Potter, then yes, that's his ideal thing. I mean, the funny thing is that when we played against Fulham, we had Adingra sort of who was sort of further up the pitch, and he's someone who can get back, and at the moment he's still someone who's a little bit maddening for me, in as much as his choices, his personal decisions at any given moment are still not quite there. But having said that, him tracking back is he does it pretty well, and I think in that instance, I would say that Lamptey is a similar player who probably would be tracking back, so he could be playing up, ahead of Veltman. But because it happens so rarely, they haven't got that kind of same link up in the way that Estupiñán and Mitoma often have. And in fact, probably on the right hand side, it's so changeable that I don't think anyone's sort of really got there's any stability on that side that yet.
I think if you're looking at a comparison of another player towards Lamptey, I think the natural comparison is Cadioglu. I think they're both very similar players and are meant to be a similar style player. But I think I look at it and go, which of those two has a higher potential? And it has to be Cadioglu. I think that whilst I love Tarik, I can't see that he potentially gets better. I think he's playing at his level, which is a very good level, but I think Cadioglu eventually, once he kind of gets up to speed and settles in fully, will be a better player than Lamptey. And I think
Can I
that's
ask you a
just
question?
a natural progression of our transfer policy and the players that we now buy.
But I mean that goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's like we've got all these amazing players that we signed and that are available, and not all of them are back up to speed. They're still finding their feet at this level.
Matt?
Yeah, and also I mean a controversial view here, shoot me down in flames. I'm not sure Adingra is a good enough player.
Actually,
And he gives us enough.
I'm actually I've got a lot of sympathy with that consideration. There's is another one that there's more coming, and you think, well, why can't you give it to us, kind of thing. With
Well,
others, you
play him
can
on the right
see
side of the
that.
pitch for a start.
Well, there's others you can see that you can see their game improving. Like, say, Igor, his game has been improving slowly over the past, sort of dozen and a half games. You can see it there. So you know full well what we haven't got the best out of him yet. But with Adingra, he probably a little bit like Lamptey has plateaued, and I don't think he's plateaued high enough yet.
I think he's gone backwards a little bit, but I think there's plenty of scope for him to come forward.
That's my point, but we haven't yet. And I think he plays often enough that he should be, putting in more performances.
He's played on the wrong side of the pitch. I mean, basically, his natural position is where Mitoma is, and he's not going to get in on that side. So when Mitoma was injured, we saw probably the best of him on in his best position.
I think that there's a kernel of truth in that. Because I want, what do they call it? Inverted players. I mean, it's just basically someone on the left with a right foot. Although I still have this bugbear, okay, bugbear incoming. And a lot of Brighton players have learned to do it now, certainly Pascal Gross did, is if they're professional footballers, why, oh, why do they still only make themselves one-legged when it comes to passing, shooting, whatever? The best ones know how to play a pass with equal merit and skill, or crossing the ball or shooting or whatever. I mean, Lamptey showed it. He can, all right, it might have been a bit of a swinger, but he showed it, at Leicester.
I can give you a partial answer to that, actually. There's a young kid who comes to the away games with us now, and his dad is a friend of Glenn Hoddle's.
Right.
And so when Bertie was growing up, he said that when he was about 8, 9 years old, he said, Uncle Glenn, give me some advice. And Uncle Glenn said, when I was 8 years old, I stopped kicking with my right foot. He said, I did all my practice with my left foot, everything, because I knew I could kick with my right foot.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that it needs to be something from very early
Yeah,
on, or
you
not at
should
all.
get
Well,
that.
I think with kids going into academies as young as 8 these days, I mean, surely they must be teaching that sort of thing to them at a very early age.
Well,
Who
some maybe
knows?
not teachable to some people, but quite a lot of people probably.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the most two-footed person that I could think of is Pascal Gross. The number of left-footed crosses he used to ping in, and used to be bloody good ones as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've seen. Obviously, I think Dunk is actually a two-foot. If you excuse the what sounds like an accusation of brutality, Dunk is a two-footed player. I've seen him be comfortable with left or right foot. I mean, he's predominantly right-footed, but I've seen that the pass is being played like that. But the nature of certainly midfield players, where there's often so much traffic, sometimes you just have absolutely no choice. I think the only exception I'd ever see is Belieber, who the reason he's one-footed is because basically he swivels on that foot, and every time he does a 360, about three players fall on their backside, and he just then jets off with the ball. And how he does it, I've no idea. But apart from that, professional footballers should be able to use both feet. Sorry,
Yeah.
it's really, is there any reason why they can't? Apart, I mean, I don't know what you just said, Matt, but bloody hell.
Okay. Well, let's move along because we have January is incoming, and we've already had one addition to the squad from the 1st of January. It's been kind of like an open secret. I mean, the fact that the player came out and said it himself in August that he was coming in January. But Diego Gomez, he looks like a very, very exciting player. He's the record signing for in terms of transfer fee for Inter Miami. So obviously he's just been playing with Lionel Messi, and now he's going to come and play with Carlos Baleba.
I think it's quite exciting. Again, he's a full Argentinian international already,
Paraguayan.
or Paraguayan, sorry. That's terrible, isn't it? It was a photo of him.
You're
Tom,
talking about
I have an edit button. You're
Messi,
okay.
right? You're talking
Yeah, but you're not going to use it, are you? That's
Messi. No, I'm really not. No.
a fun bit. Yeah, he's a full Paraguayan international. And clearly has the respect of Messi based on the photo of them after the recent international, which is why I got confused there. And he looks like he's got loads of skill. Let's add him to our repertoire of crazy South American
Is he
midfielders.
oven
Come
ready,
through.
or is he going to be going off on loan?
Well, I think judging by the way that he's playing and the fact, I mean, obviously it's MLS, so I mean, I don't know, I still don't know what kind of a level that actually is, but the fact that Messi's there is and still,
Messi is just dawdling around there, isn't he?
well, yeah, but he's having a lovely time earning lots of money, but so yeah, I mean, I think that apparently it's going to be a very, very good thing for Julian Cesar to have another Paraguayan around. I think that they're very, very tight in the Paraguayan setup. I think he's just feeling a little bit unsettled at the moment, Julio, and I think he maybe needs that. But I'm not saying
How does
we've
bringing
gone
in
out and bought a player just for that.
someone
But
else who's going to keep him out of the team settle him?
yeah,
Well,
exactly.
that's true. But
Yeah, so yeah, well, I think this is a case of wait and see, because like I say, we've had South American wonder kids before, and two of them are out on loan. Frankly, they should have been out on loan, when they came in, and because in the way that Caicedo went out on loan to a bottom of the table Belgian side, obviously
beer shot.
Mitoma was on loan. These players, they needed their time to blood into, well, if only European football. Now, obviously, you can't necessarily say that USG is the play at the pace of the Premier League, but those players went on loan, and yes, we bided our time and we got the rewards for them. Now, in this case, in the case of obviously Buonanotte and Barco, then yeah, they came in and were blooded straight away. I think personally, you could tell before they were ready, and you'd like to think that whatever happens in their relative loan spells, that they're actually going to get, better for doing what they do. At least Buonanotte didn't play against us.
Yeah. Tom?
I think the difference here is, you know, we've got a player coming in that's played quite a few times already as a full international. Buonanotte, Barco, Enciso, they weren't necessarily internationals at the point that they came in. So I think he's been playing at a good level, at least internationally, and obviously has already been in a different country to play. And I think if you look at the way that the club have announced it and some of the quotes, it's all talking around they expect him to be pushing for a place in the squad.
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised if we suddenly said we're going to send you out in
Yeah.
January straight
But
away.
does anyone actually know what he actually is?
He's a
Paraguayan.
footballer.
Yeah, he's Paraguayan, but he might be Argentinian.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, do
Okay.
you remember those days? You know, is it? I don't know if he's left winger, right winger, forward. I
Well,
don't
there's
know.
the surprise, isn't it, AD? We've got to wait and see.
I know,
I
but
mean,
you
I know
know.
you want the lowdown in a minute. You want to do one of those pen pictures where you say favorite food, favorite pop star, you know, and we're back to sort of, is it going to be Phil Collins or Luther Vandross? You know, just wait and see. It's
Is
quite exciting.
I can't wait till January. I just have to go onto
One
YouTube.
consideration with him, though, is going back to what we were saying about Wefo, is you're going to have to give him time to adjust
Yes.
the pace.
Absolutely.
That's the second. I mean, I
I would
still
imagine the
feel.
MLS, there's a big difference between playing in the MLS and playing
Yeah.
in the
Yeah. I mean,
basically.
having watched some MLS games, there is a huge difference.
Exactly. You know, and
I mean, with the gun to your head, Matt,
that's
I mean,
going to
could you
take some
actually
time.
pick what your best 11 is, because it's a very difficult thing to do at the moment.
It's not Matt's worry, is it?
Well, I could pick my best 11.
Go on then.
Verbruggen, Veltman, Dunk, Van Hecke, Estupian, Belaiba,
Who's going to play alongside Belabor?
probably Hinshelwood at the moment.
Okay.
If he's fit, Mitoma, probably Minte, probably Jorginho, João Pedro, Welbeck.
That's
That's
actually
12.
that's a pretty mean starting 11, isn't it? I mean, therein lies the point, isn't it? The one, like, well, they're all important positions, but the one question mark is the other central midfielder, isn't it? And like I say, you realise that others do have to still step up to the mark.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How long have we got, Al?
I mean, that's the only position, that one where I put Hinshelwood, that I would,
Do you
I'd
prefer
allow. I'd
Hinshelwood at
allow
right
you to
back or in
pick
central
someone.
midfield?
Sorry?
Do you prefer Hinshelwood at right back or central midfield?
Central midfield, because I like to see him get forward and score goals more.
Fair
We
enough.
scored more goals as a central defender.
Well, he probably has,
As
actually, but
luck
you
would
know what I mean.
have
I, in theory.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah. What's up with him? How long before he's back? Do we know? It's not growing pains, is it?
It's a slight knock, I think they call it, so he
Yeah.
could be out for a year or two.
Yeah, I was about to say a slight
He's
knock.
a Hinshelwood. We're never going to see him
Well,
again,
this is
probably.
it. I mean, this is what you really it terrify well, not terrifies me, because but it terrifies me in football terms, the fact that, you know, no Hinshelwoods made it into their 30s in their career. Because, you know, they got broken. And I really hope that Jack is made of sterner stuff. But then actually coming up the on the rails is his cousin, Harry Howells, playing for the under 21s, even though he's only about 12. Your textbook winger with a sort of floppy hairdo, socks round his ankles. He doesn't wear shin pads. And
And cool. I saw him in the playing against Reading
yeah.
last year. He went to penalties and he took the last penalty. Cool as you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Al, you've just described yourself there, though, haven't you, as well? So,
well, floppy hairdo, socks
Doesn't
around
wear
the
shin
ankle.
pads.
Well,
That's
when I was
it. That's it.
16, yes, I did play, like, and I did play on the wing for the school. But yes,
Yeah.
yeah, and I think that's where it finished.
Well, the thing about Hinshelwood is he's going to be getting better medical attention than any of the
Well,
previous.
there is that. Yeah,
So,
no more Malcolm Stewart.
no. Well, with that in mind, we do have a game coming up this Sunday with Crystal Palace, the visitors to the Amex. The good news is they're out the bottom three, so that gives us a chance.
I'm so happy that they picked up a few points in the last 2 weeks just to get them to 17th.
Yeah, but everyone's taking points of Man City tub at the moment, so you know.
Yeah, it doesn't really
Oh
count.
yeah. So you actually should be thanking Pep.
Yeah,
Well, there
but
is that. But I
it's
mean,
good. I mean, so far this season, we actually lost a game to them the other day in Tiddlywinks, I think it was. But when you saw us put 10 past them out.
oh, have I ever mentioned this on the Albion Rule before?
No,
Have
you might
I?
have mentioned it once or twice. Yeah,
Oh,
the women have beaten. Surely it's our turn now. And
that was.
last season, beat them, gave them a hiding for the first time for a very long time with the 4-1 victory. Great goal from Adam Hinshelwood in that game, actually. Adam Hinshelwood, Jack Hinshelwood. You've got me doing it now, and spot the Hinshelwood.
The Paraguayan.
I mean, there is. I mean, if we can actually take our chances like we know I can, because we have been so profligate in front of goal in all the games, not just at home, but the game against the last game against Southampton, where we should have been 8-0 up at half time and again threw away a lead. It's we've got to stop doing this, haven't we?
One of the things that we have against Crystal Palace, and certainly apart from this 4-1 from last year, is I can't help feeling that either Palace have raised their game or we've just taken it when we've clearly been the better side. I mean, anyone remember that game behind closed doors where we absolutely battered them? They scored with two,
Yeah.
even, yeah.
Yes, I
Potter
do.
throwing Graham of the Graham Potter, throwing his couple that kind of thing. And there needs to be a ruthlessness with Crystal Palace, and there was last year. But the other thing about it is that yes, it's a game. Yes, they're professionals, but because there is that something extra when it is Brighton against Palace, what concerns me very slightly is the number of new people here who actually don't necessarily know that. They shouldn't have to, but then when you're talking about sort of like the human element of playing a game of football, these sorts of things do add a bit of spice and therefore a bit of pep to the to
Yeah.
the to the
But the biggest thing with that, I think, is the crowd needs to turn up
Yeah.
on Sunday, get the atmosphere rocking. I think that genuinely fires the players up. That's something that helps spur us on against Man City, for example. A good atmosphere there. You think of big wins that we have, there's always good atmospheres as we're getting going. And I think we have to kind of make it that rivalry atmosphere, make the players understand that it's fierce by using our voices.
Matt, is there anything you can get for the 1901 people to actually, sort of add to the atmosphere, or I don't know, poison the prawn sandwiches or something?
Well, I could try. I mean, if you, it's Phil you really want to talk to.
Well, is he silent during the game then?
He swears as much as I do.
Ah, good. That's allowed.
Well, yeah, and I've just started taking my grandsons and vying for the ticket every week, and they are learning some choice language from Phil. I don't know. Is the answer.
No,
No,
so.
is the answer. I mean, they join us in. So if the North Stand is working, they will join in. But
Yes.
you won't get them to
Yeah.
lead
The
anything.
big question, though, in terms of stuff is, as it's a game outside of London, have Palace actually sold out their allocation?
Well, probably not.
Well, actually, it's interesting the point you make about the North Stand. I know we've touched on it in the last couple of weeks. Let's take your thing on it. Of safe standing coming in next year, Tom.
Yeah.
Is that something you're going to take advantage of?
Being in the East End, no.
That's a shame.
But
I thought you were in the north.
I think it's a really good move, and it's not a shock that as soon as they only ask the people that would actually be impacted by it, there's overwhelming support for it, and then it gets acted on. And it's probably one of the few areas where you could say that the club has legitimately been behind the curve. I think we were, up until we announced that, the only club in the Premier League that either didn't have it or had no plans to introduce it.
Yeah.
So
Look,
it's taken us way too long
yeah,
to
I
pick
got
up.
really got the impression they didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
Well, there was consultation a couple of
There
years
was
ago,
no, there's, I think it was a long
it
time
got
ago.
largely ignored.
Oh yeah, I went to a consultation about sort of 6, 7 years ago, and there was probably about 30 people turned up, and the ambivalence was from certain supporters groups. It was actually off the scale. It was actually quite poor, I thought. I mean, as much as yes, you're right, the club was is behind the at the time they were ahead of it, and you know, if you're going to use this motoring term of the curve, then the fans, and I'm going to say the fans slammed the brakes on. And
But were they asking the right fans? Were they asking the fans where it would actually be implemented?
I think
Whereas
everyone knew it was the
all
North
of
Stand.
the,
Yeah.
I
but
think
all of
also there's a
the,
change in there once you've experienced it.
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I think it's great.
Okay, well, that is all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much to Matthew Potter. Thank you to Tom Hyland. Thank you to Alan Wears. I've been Ady Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up,
jump, jump.
Stand up for your rights.
Sick and tired of your ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in the Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you
gonna we
do?
Gonna stand up for,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better
get up.
Don't give up the fight.